Now, have you calculated what your, if you were to sell everything today, have you calculated what your returns would be on those things?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I mean, I've only owned them for like 3 years, and I would more than have doubled my initial investment. Like everything, like the exact amount, I don't know, but like I was like, yeah, more than doubled on real estate in 3 years. It's kind of insane.
Welcome to Real Estate Hackers, where you'll hear how real estate investors grew something from nothing.
Property management is going to become more techy. Our entire business today is based off of a hack. What if you could put $1,000 into an apartment building project on your phone?
With YouTube, with podcasts, you can catch up very quickly to a seasoned investor.
Now here's your real estate hacker host, Chad Gallagher.
What's up, guys? I am extra pumped for today's Real Estate Hackers podcast as we have not only a interesting real estate tech entrepreneur joining us, also happens to be a friend of mine that goes back to the University of Virginia days.
Wahoo!
Dan Laufer in the house. Welcome.
Hey, buddy. Thank you. Good to be here. Appreciate it.
Cool. This will be fun. Normally, I have to go digging on people's like back history to find out all the stuff about them. In this case, I know. Probably more than I need to know. So this will
be sounds sketchier than it is, but okay.
So cool. So Dan, I wanted you on here for a couple of reasons. And we'll talk about them through the conversation. There's two things I find kind of interesting. One, I guess we'll start with on the real estate investing side before we get to what you do as a day job.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of people out there who want to acquire properties in a passive manner, not be there day to day. And you're like just a perfect example of someone who's done it and frankly made a lot of money without spending too much time. Maybe give folks just a little background sure. Kind of what you did.
I mean, I guess really kind of two things to mention. One, you had a syndication that I invested in, which is like the most ideally passive in the world. I literally just set it and forget it. That was fun. I think probably the next, which is not as passive, but still quite passive. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say it's still going.
Patient
will probably go for like 20 years, I guess. And
it's amazing. It's just like whenever I get the distribution, like I say something nice about you. So it's kind of like your annual praise you get from me. The other, was buying a few houses and working with you to do so in central PA. And a bit of a leap there because I at that point had not even set foot there, like literally bought sight unseen, got connected to a real estate agent that you referred me to who would do video tours, give me the feedback. We did the inspection all remotely. And, I kind of just penciled it all out and was like, it seems like there's margin to spare, how much can I screw this up? I don't know.
The town you bought in is Pottstown, which happens to be a favorite of mine. People who've listened to this podcast for a long time will know I love myself some Pottstown. It's a Philly suburb. It's about an hour outside Philly.
Maybe 40, suburb 40 feels like an extreme, but yeah. Exurb. Yeah.
Okay. And but it's right on the edge of some really expensive towns.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is not only do you not step foot in the houses, did you even know where Pottstown was?
No, I never heard of it. I actually thought, I was like, is that the city and It's a Wonderful Life? Like, I was like, I don't, is this real? I looked it up and I'm like, I see it on Google Earth. So that was reassuring. had literally never heard of it before. You sent me, you're like, I think this is good. If you don't buy it, I'm going to buy it. I'm like, well, okay. That's a great way to drive FOMO. And bought it. And then, had your property management managed it, and Home365 did it. And then they had their one rate of whatever it's called, where it's like just guaranteed, like, we're just going to pay you this amount every month, no matter what. It doesn't have to have a tenant. And that was really nice because then it's just passive cash flow that just is appearing. And, I'd say from my end, every now and then it's like the city will send me some notice, like you didn't file your like license or inspection. So it's not as passive as syndication. Like there's still things that will like come to me and I have to take action. And the cash flow is a little lumpier because like right now I just got like the property tax bill that's due, So it's not as smooth of cash flow as like a syndication, but It is kind of nice because like I feel like it's more tangible too. And also like I know you and I trust you, but like it's nice to have like I can control my own destiny. Like if I wanted to 1031 one of these, if I wanted to sell, like I can do whatever I want, right? So there's a little bit of like freedom there that exists here that in a syndication you lose.
Yeah, I think that's great. Just so people understand, so these are single family homes. I would say they're like probably B minus class.
Maybe 20 A plus. Shit.
And no, they're not A. but we don't, you know, look, nothing wrong with boring B class single family homes. I like those. And so I think you bought like three of them. And now have you calculated what your, if you were to sell everything today, have you calculated what your returns would be on those things?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I mean, I've only owned them for like 3 years and I would more than have doubled my initial investment. Like everything, like the exact amount, I don't know, but like, I was like, yeah, more than doubled on real estate in 3 years. It's kind of insane. Yeah.
That's amazing. You got loans on them. So there's some leverage. The property values have gone up. They've cash flowed along the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that means you're looking at like an IRR of like 35%.
Yeah, which is like okay.
30.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice conservative IRR. Yeah.
Without being, I mean, this isn't like 100% passive, but it sure is approaching a passive investment.
Yeah. Pretty close to passive. And also it's not like I've done a lot of value add. I mean, I've done almost nothing. Like we've invested in maintenance. Right. You know, we had to replace the drain, so that kind of sucked. But it's not like, oh, I came in here. Like, you know, I see people have crazy returns doing the fixer upper model and putting in the elbow grease. And I've had none of that. So I mean, that's pretty attractive.
Have you actually stepped foot in one of the properties yet?
No, not even. I actually still have not even been to Pottstown. So
I thought you drove by the houses when you were here.
I did drive by it and I didn't have time. So I just skipped it. So I wanted to put, I didn't have time. I was like, I have to. So I was going to drive by and look and it just didn't work.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
No, well, it works. It's great. And I love it because I get all these like solicitation calls being like, do you want to sell your home? And so I was kind of like, whatever, like, let's play this game, you know, and I bought like a property for like 130K. Like, what are you willing to sell it for? I'm like 300K. Like, I just whatever. They're not going to do it. But if they say yes, let's do it. And like, okay, how many, like, tell me about the home. Like, and I'm like, well, whatever you need to know is on Zillow. And they're like, okay, but we have follow-on questions. I'm like, I don't know the answers any more than you do. Because like, they're like, you know, tell me about the air conditioning unit. I don't know. What does Zillow say? Like, whatever that is, like, that's what I would go with because I don't know. So that's
awesome, the knowledge.
Yeah.
And your mortgage is probably fixed in at a, like, you know, 4% or something.
Yeah, 4.5% is my bet. Yeah. I mean, it's fixed for 5 years and then it floats. So like, I'm hoping in the next couple of years, interest rates come back down. But you know, not terrible.
That could work out well for you.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you think you'll buy more?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think now it's just like, you know, portfolio management, but like, yes, I, in my horizon, I would want to buy more of these. I like it.
Cool. By the way, you live in California. I don't think we've mentioned that yet.
Yeah, correct.
So the other side of the coast, you are not a Philly sports fan.
The opposite. You're correct. Yes.
The team that got smoked. In the championship. Yeah,
no, that's true. It hurts not having a quarterback. But if that's what it takes for Philly to win, I'm happy for you guys.
You fit in very well with the 49ers. They've been saying that all off season. So
no, it's true. No, they are sharing facts that I will reiterate. That is true.
Cool. Let's jump to what you do as a day job.
Yeah.
So graduated from UVA engineering. Yep. Worked for like a top three consulting company in Bain, then went to Nextdoor. I probably missed a couple,
steps, but yeah, it's fine. I mean, if you want the whole resume, yeah, I worked for an enterprise software company in San Diego, went to Stanford for business school, did a startup apartment rental space, then went to Nextdoor, never caught up.
And then left there to do something kind of crazy. You'd have years of plumbing experience.
You
always wanted to be a plumber your whole life.
Yep.
And you decided I'm going to start a plumbing company.
I'm practically a master plumber myself. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So let's get the company's called Pipe Dreams.
Yep.
Started 2 years ago. Do I have that about right?
Closer to three, two and a half, three.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm technically an angel investor in this company, which I actually, when I wrote the check, I felt like I was writing a check that was going to go to zero, to be totally frank with you.
Okay. Thank you.
But I believe
not done yet.
Yeah, not yet. But it's been a good run. So yeah. you're a couple years in.
Yeah.
Give people what the background of Pipe Dreams is. Like, what were you trying to do? It's a little unique story.
Yes. I mean, so we buy plumbing and HVAC businesses. Obviously, we're not the only ones in the world to do that. I think we're unique in a few ways. One is the average business we're buying is typically $4 to $7 million in revenue. And usually has like maybe narrower profit margin than probably the typical business that's being acquired. And our thesis is that, you know, we've built a lot of infrastructure and process and technology that can really help scale these businesses and drive efficiency and improve margins and really grow them. And, you know, that is a pretty unique model. And that, like, you have a bunch of like big private equity groups buying really big scaled businesses. You kind of have these search funders out buying these, like, you know, usually smaller, maybe onesie, twosie businesses. And, you know, our attitude is like, we want to build the infrastructure that we can go buy every 5 million revenue plumbing business in the US.
That's awesome. You bought like 10?
Eight.
We can
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Eight. I always exaggerate. So you bought eight. And so that would, so based on what you're telling me, you've acquired, call it 30 million in revenue, something like right. that.
Yeah.
And revenue now is like 40 million.
Yeah. So I won't say exact numbers, but it's growing. It's growing at a healthy rate, better than, you know, the industry average. I'll hedge a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. I think maybe it's fair to say, I don't know if you'd say this, but like maybe 7 of the 8, you were happy with the acquisitions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
So maybe give us some, so you had no background in plumbing.
Right.
You
tiny got a little inconsequential detail. Yeah.
what attracted you to the plumbing industry? I know you and I talked a couple of times, but sure. You were kind of on this path.
Yeah. Plumbing and HVAC. And I think what it was, while I was at Nextdoor, you know, recognizing that this was a huge source of demand. One of the top use cases on people next door is people looking for recommendations of home service providers. And so that kind of triggered this, like, wow, of all the local needs out there, like, this is like darn near number one that's being asked on, like, is like pretty large platform. And then you kind of do dig into the industry, like, there's some interesting trends here of like the demand is only going to grow, especially as you have smaller households, you know, meaning there's going to be more households. You have more do it for me rather than do it yourself. And then you're going to have more and more people retiring out of this industry and less people coming in. And so that just creates this interesting dynamic where there's going to be an incredible amount of demand, a lot of opportunity. As in this like thrust of change and this like sea change that's happening. And, you know, it feels like what we're doing requires a lot of like operational legwork, which is not sexy. And that makes it hard, but also makes it a really exciting opportunity. Cause I think a lot of people just gravitate to the, like, I'm going to do what's easy. And I think one of my lessons, having done a startup before, is usually what's easy is not where you create the most value. So, like, in some ways, I kind of wanted to run towards, like, this is hard, but if we do it well, there's going to be a lot of value created. And that is what excited me about it. And then to why plumbing and why HVAC, is just, these are two of the biggest, you know, that plus electrical are the three biggest home services trades there are. And they're relatively recession-proof. You know, there's some seasonality with HVAC, but, you know, plumbing and then electrical have very modest seasonality. So you can really grow and scale a business, you know, through uptimes and downtimes in that dynamic.
Having a reliable plumber and HVAC technician who's reasonably priced is a huge pain point. I mean, sure. there's no question about it. I'm curious, now you're both an investor and now you sit on the plumbing HVAC side as an executive. I don't know, any takeaways for maybe that real estate investor of how to maybe, I don't know, keep plumbing and HVAC costs more reasonable,
yeah.
How to find a high quality plumbing and HVAC company without overspending.
Yeah, well, look, I think the number one is ongoing maintenance, as with everything, is usually going to extend the life and the value of your equipment, right? And so that's just kind of like a, not a sexy, you know, tip, but like, it's true, right? It's just having that recurring, you know, $150-$200 a year. It's a little bit of expense, but it will keep things running smoother longer. Usually most reputable companies will offer you some membership agreement where they're going to come out once or twice a year for that fee, but then you also get 10% off or something like that on your service. And so like, it kind of pays.
Do you guys offer that? I don't even know.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a, you know, frankly, from our lens, that's a customer acquisition, right? Like that, the maintenance is usually a break-even like a proposition for us. We don't really view that as a profit center, but then when it is time for you to replace your equipment, you know, you already have some loyalty to us as a business. And so that's the value prop from our lens.
Owning this business, owning real estate, has made you even more, I guess, focused on, like, you definitely see the value in the kind of yearly check-in, change those filters, do the tune-up. I know, like, there's some questions in the real estate space of like, it sounds good, does it actually save money? I think you probably have more data than anyone. It's worth it.
I think so. I mean, look, I think it depends on your service provider to somewhat, right? Like, so there's such variance in all of these things, and it's hard because it's hard to do the counterfactual. Like, you know, I can't perfectly isolate the same piece of equipment in the same environment with or without service, but
right. You
just, you know, the intuitive, like, if you have a reliable, trustworthy service provider and they're providing you, you know, good recommendations and they're tuning your equipment, it should extend the life. And if they're not trying to upsell you too quickly, then it should give you like a good value over the lifetime.
Let's talk about the upselling too quickly. I think every investor has that story. I know I do. Yeah, house I lived in Baltimore, guy comes out and says, you definitely need two new systems here, you know, $4,000 each. I can do it today.
Sure.
And, you know, had a different guy. And I said, well, what's plan B? And plan B is like, it's not going to work, but I can spend an hour. And that's 10 years ago. And there has been a problem since. So, and it cost me $100. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on, I don't know, maybe advice for an investor to look, there's clearly times when you do need a new system.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on the equipment, and I think it depends on the circumstance. And it depends like on the, but you know, so it, like, so let's kind of get into more specifics, right? Which is like, if you're telling me, and so no, I think number one thing is knowing the standard life of the equipment that you own, because, you know, water heater, about 10 years, right? Like, it depends, furnace and AC, anywhere between 10 to 15 years. So if someone's making a recommendation and your age of equipment is not right there, then like that would probably raise my eyebrows on that, right? So if like your equipment is 5, 6, 7 years old and they're saying you need to replace it, I would be skeptical. I think the, you know, the industry standard expectation is if your life of equipment is beyond that, it's just an unknown. Like just like with your car, you know, like your car could go 200,000 miles, it could go 300,000 miles. Just depends. Like there's some randomness there. And how expensive, you know, your car is a good example here, is like, if you said, look, I really don't care if my car breaks down, it's not a big deal, I don't have kids and I'm not in a hurry ever. And, you know, so if it breaks down, it'll be embarrassing, but I got a tow truck, I'll be fine. You know, then just ride it till it dies, go, you know? And, but if you're like, well, that would be pretty devastating, then you probably should replace it. And personally, like my house, my personal house, our furnace was just old as dirt. And, you know, we were anticipating our newborn was coming in December. And I just was like, even without any prompting, I was like, I just want to replace my furnace because this thing dies and I've got like a newborn and now we're cold and my wife is going to hate me. Like, I'd rather just get ahead of this, right? So, yeah. You know, I think it depends. And so if you live in extreme climate areas, you know, right now you look at a lot of the country, but, you know, we own a business in Tucson and it's whatever, 110 degrees every day and our crews are booked out. You know, if I were living there and I would look at my AC and it's that age, I'd say, well, if I don't replace it, how long will it take for it to get replaced? It increases the cost, effectively, the risk, right? And so that's probably the trade-off I would do is, you know, if someone's recommending in December, hey, you need to replace your AC, you know, you can decide like, is it, how urgent is it? It's just kind of the level of urgency and then how devastating is it if you do have to?
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to switch topics a little bit here, but stay on the plumbing thing or in HVAC. You manage a lot of contractors, obviously. I mean, they're employees.
Technicians, but, yeah.
Yeah, technicians, which is interesting because a lot of real estate investors in some way, shape, or form actually manage a lot of what we would normally call contractors, but they're also technicians.
Yeah.
I would say most investors, it's not their favorite part about what they do. You have what, like 100, something like that, 200? I don't even know.
Yeah. A lot. In that range, yeah.
Any words of wisdom of how to, keep people on track, keep your sanity?
Well, I don't know that I am like the genius here. I don't overstate my credentials, but I do think, look, I think ultimately what people are looking for is transparency, communication. So I think that's on the front end, kind of what you owe to people. And whenever I feel like we've faltered, it's we've not been good enough at that, frankly. It's like, I think that's where you can always be better there. And I think you can build a lot of trust with that. I think on the other side is where I've realized where we can get burned is if we're not managing tightly enough. You know, I think we now have reporting on every single job. And look, you know, we're humans, right? So people make mistakes, but you can then manage where we have gotten burned, it's like as a business, is we don't manage to that level. And then you get to the end of the month, you're like, well, what happened? And it's like, oh, well, this person just stopped following the process, you know, the fifth day of the month, and no one called it out till the end, right? Whereas if you're managing everything on an individual job basis, okay, hey, you made a mistake. It's okay. Get your head back in the game. Here's what you need to do to fix it. And I think it's that level of detail that's necessary. And then that way, it gets back to the communication piece, it's a form of accountability, but it also reassures, you know, your employee that they're doing this job well, right? Like, I think when they're running for a while without that feedback loop, it's like, is this right? I don't know. Well, no one's telling me otherwise, so I'm going to keep doing it. And so tightening that feedback loop, I think, is actually good for both parties.
Talk me through a little bit. I know at least the premise of what you're doing is making some technology enhancements to improve things over time. How's that going? Yeah. Are you seeing, is it working? Are you seeing enhancements coming? Is there something that maybe you can talk about that's interesting or?
Yeah. So I think there's a few things, you know. One is one of the big investments is just tighter feedback loop on the data and the reporting on an every single job basis, right? So like getting to that level of persistent detail that we're able to capture in real time. How did the job go? What was the customer satisfaction? What was the gross margin of the job? How much did the technician get paid, right? And did that all tie? Does it work for everybody, right? And so if you can manage it on every single job level, then it's going to roll up and work out, right? So I think that's a big one. We're making a lot of investments in how we handle calls and making sure that, you know, that we are handling every single phone call in a best practice way and driving efficiency there and standardization. And that's a huge investment we're making. And then there's more technology in the back end to optimize getting the right tech to the right job, you know, consistently. And then, you know, to come still is, you know, it's going to, I think, be ready to go live. And, you know, by the end of this year is integrations to allow, you know, folks like property management companies to be able to book directly and really streamline their ability to deploy technicians on demand, and I think really help, you know, create some synergy between, you know, our business and property management companies.
You haven't talked about AI yet. You live in California. I'm kind of surprised. I feel like...
Wait, do you think you're talking to the real Dan? This is the AI bot.
Oh, God. This is the bot that's supposed to go on like Chad's real estate show, not the actual California-based person.
Yeah, no, that person's time is way too valuable. So. Well, I think like as I talk, you know, that dispatch mechanism has an AI component to it. But going back to the prior point, is like, look, I don't think AI is the hub of our business because plumbing, for as long as I can see, and HVAC, as long as I can see, is still going to require a human in the home doing work. And I don't think AI is going to replace that for the foreseeable future.
But for sure. But I'm sure you're getting some questions of, can we use AI to replace when someone calls in for a new job or someone has a service request? And it sounds like actually there's more basic building blocks here of just making it easy to book something. Yeah. And if someone does call, make sure you answer the phone right away.
Yeah. Actually, it's that simple. I think so. I think we're like, we've, you know, just yesterday I was talking to someone who's building an AI tool to assist your CSRs, to kind of give them like a dynamic script that they can then like is listening to the call and like supporting them with the best practice, you know, objection handling. So we're looking at things like that. We're looking, you know, we can apply AI into, you know, our proprietary dispatch, which allows you to book more efficiently. So there's places you can inject it. But I think it's places where you're getting incremental leverage and not just wholesale replacing.
Cool. There's a lot of like real estate entrepreneurs that listen to this show. How's it been being a real estate entrepreneur? Is it last couple of years? Look, real estate entrepreneurs are kind of known for a lot of, you know, it's a roller coaster. I guess that's maybe like anybody, but I think this.
Probably differently than most, because I feel like I'm less tied to the ups and downs of real estate. In the pure sense, like the market, like we're a little more agnostic to the market. We don't do new construction. We're not really affected by interest.
Plumbing and HVAC is not really like, you go into a huge economic slump, it's probably not changing too much. Maybe a few less people are getting installs, but.
Right. I think more like labor, you know, the impact on labor demand and labor supply is more impactful for me than like the real estate market, you know, per se. I think a lot, like my brother does real estate, and I think one of the best parts of his job is like, he has no people. It's just like, he has contractors, but like, you know, there's not a lot of people. Like, we are a very people driven business, and there's parts of it that's great, and there's parts of it that present challenges. And yes, that does present a roller coaster ride for sure.
How big can this business get? Pretty big.
I mean, this is a massive industry. Like, we are only constrained by our ability to execute, you know? And so like, I think the
billions,
it could be $100 billion business, you know, like frankly, like one of our investors who co-led our Series A, I remember we were talking during kind of like that pitch phase, and she's like, this could be massive. And I was like, I think it could be $100 billion business. And she's like, I think it could be way bigger than that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do that. I like your version. I thought I was going big and bold, $100 billion, but no, it could be way bigger. Yeah, no, you're right. I totally.
You fit in so well in California.
Yeah. But you know, look, I think if you perfect the model and you execute well and you create value for consumers, and it's something that has an evergreen and massive demand, it is a global product, right? And so like, that's part of it is like, if you execute the shit out of it, there's no reason why you can't execute this model globally. You know, obviously maybe like, not like China, but like
Painted
90,
up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, no, Mexico, like Europe, right? Like, tons of huge markets that are still available and that you could have a huge impact. And so, why not? Like, and I think it's something, you look at Amazon is so fundamental, just shopping, right, is what it is. And the convenience they provide you around that experience. And I'm sure they are way bigger than they ever could have imagined they'd be on the front end. And so that's the opportunity.
You've bought a bunch of companies. A lot of people who listen to this are negotiating every day with people who are selling sometimes distressed assets. Maybe something interesting you've learned along the way on the negotiation path with someone.
Yeah, I think where I have found the negotiation path is it always helps to present people options. And so especially where I've encountered places, someone's like, this has so much upside. It's going to be so huge. I can't imagine parting for it for the dollar amount that you're going to ask for today. And so my feedback to there is, look, I'm doing this because I also believe this has a lot of upside. So I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong. It's going to be a lot of elbow grease on our part to realize that upside. But if you want, like, we can ride alongside each other. So here's like a very earnout heavy structure, you know, and it's going to be some percentage of revenue to simplify, because like, I don't want us to like have to litigate what the profit is and what's not and what we're allocating back to the business. So here's some percentage of revenue, you know, over X period of time. And this is what we think we can do. I can't guarantee it, but we're going to work like hell to make it happen. And then you get this upside and you end up getting this much larger number. And some people say, that's fantastic. I want that. And I'm in. And other people say, well, that seems really risky. I don't feel comfortable with that. And I said, that's right. It absolutely is risky. And, but I'm taking that risk too, right? So if you want that upside, then you kind of have to ride that risk with me. If you don't, then here's the today dollar amount that I can give you. And if you don't want any risk, that's fair. Then I'm going to take the risk. And if there's upside, I'm going to take it. And that, not always, but a lot of times, is able to cut through what people value, because, you know, they have to weigh that risk alongside of us. And I set it up where I'm agnostic. Either option they pick is fine. What I can't do is like, oh, you want this bigger number, I'm just going to front load all of it to you. I'm going to take all the risk and you get all of the upside. Like, that I can't do.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Cool. Dan, one last thing I ask everybody on here, something you're excited about from a tech perspective for the next 5 years.
I mean, it's trite because it's like, but I mean, AI is a super interesting, I'm just fascinated to see how it's going to unfold and how is it going to change where people choose to live? How does it change labor demands? You know, because again, I don't know that it's going to fundamentally change my business and like the how we execute and who we employ. But I think what it could change is if it disrupts a lot of people's jobs that you no longer live maybe in a huge urban area and you choose to move to a more suburban area, and that you can, there's a little more remote work, there's a little it just shifts how everyone works, I think, potentially. And that I think will be interesting to see how that shifts real estate, how that shifts demand for services. That I think will be really interesting.
Cool. Dan, your company's doing some really cool things. We haven't had someone on quite like you. Pipe Dreams. If someone wants to reach out, maybe they want to talk to you more about business or join your team. What's the given path? LinkedIn or how do you like to say
you can go to pipedreams.com. There's a info form you can fill out that I'll see and I'll reply to. You can message me on LinkedIn as well. So either of those works.
Cool. You don't do Instagram, do you? You're not like,
no, I'm not vain.
Yeah. Real estate hackers on Instagram. If you want to start chasing that, it's growing. People like,
no, actually, I'll tell you what, Molly started. She's really impressed. So
Molly's been impressed. That's great.
Yeah. Not easy to do.
All right, Dan, thanks for joining, bud. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure. See you, buddy.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Real Estate Hackers Show. If you've not yet become a member of Real Estate Hackers, you can do that for free at realestatehackers.com. Get access to all of the amazing real estate hacker deals from incredible vendors, on a ton of content and materials for you, the investor. You can follow Real Estate Hackers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. If you can give us a 5-star review for the podcast, I would personally really appreciate it. We read every review, and thank you so much for helping us grow this community for you, the real estate investor.